Hey everybody, it's JT. What is on your holiday meal shopping list? Well, I would suggest Painted Hills Natural Beef. It is some of the best beef in the world. And your friends and family will be thanking you for a long time if you serve Painted Hills Natural Beef for your holiday meals. And now you can buy it online just by going to PaintedHillsBeef.com. Use the code BBQNATION at checkout and save yourself 15% on your order. Give Painted Hills Natural Beef a place on your table this holiday season.
It's Barbecue Nation with JT on a Northwest Lifestyle Weekend. Now here's JT.
Hey everybody, welcome to Barbecue Nation. I'm JT along with my second-in-command producer Dave. High atop the radio world in the Turn It, Don't Burn It studios in downtown Portland, and we welcome all of our affiliates on the Radio Northwest Network. I know this is hard to believe, but Stephen Reichlin's got a new book out. I think it's number 31 or something for Stephen. And I say that with all respect and love and loyalty, but he just keeps cranking them out, and they still do good. Project Fire, the cutting-edge techniques of sizzling recipes. From the caveman porterhouse to the salt slab brownie s'mores. How about that? Well, we're going to have Stephen on the phone with us here in just a second. This week, we're going to have some tunes from Simon and Garfunkel. And I wanted to tell you very quickly that this portion of Barbecue Nation is brought to you in part by Painted Hills Natural Beef. From the heart of the Pacific Northwest, beef you can feel good about. So let's get Stephen on the line here and talk about Project Fire. I think we've got him. Hey, Stephen, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Doing great.
Do you ever sleep?
Not a whole lot, especially not this time of year. This is, you know, book tour season, barbecue season, so I'm pretty busy.
Yeah, every time we talk to you, you're pretty busy. Your new book is Project Fire, Cutting Edge Techniques in Sizzling and Sizzling Recipes. We're going to talk about some of the recipes in a little bit. What prompted you to actually do Project Fire?
Well, you know, a few years ago, I came out with a book called Project Smoke. It was a book about the art of smoking. And it just seemed like a logical bookend to that idea to return to grilling. Grilling, of course, is where I began with Project Fire, but really to take a look at sort of grilling today and tomorrow, the new techniques, the new grills, the new fuels, all of the new foods that we're grilling today that maybe we didn't 20 years ago when I wrote Barbecue Bible.
Well, we're going to talk about your seven steps to grilling Nirvana in a little later in the show. But over the years you've traveled, you probably have traveled more than any other food guy that I know. And kind of take us through the metamorphosis of Stephen Reichlin from when you, the first time you got on a plane and went to Europe or Africa or wherever, to where you are today in your cooking and what you're writing about.
Well, actually, in a funny way, my food writing career began right there in Portland, Oregon. I graduated from Reed College with a degree in French literature. And upon graduation, I won a Thomas J. Watson Foundation Fellowship to study medieval cooking in Europe. So that was really my first food writing trip. I lived in Europe for 2 years. I visited all the great libraries to study medieval cookery manuscripts. I went to castles and monasteries to see medieval kitchens. And I also attended a modern French cooking school, La Varenne, to kind of understand the grammar and vocabulary of cooking. So since then, you know, whenever I start a new book, whenever I launch a new TV show, first thing I do is I pack a suitcase. I've been to more in the order of 65 countries on six continents researching their cooking.
Okay, you kind of broke up there just a little bit at the end, but you said you've been to how many countries?
63 countries on six continents.
There you go.
Researching live fire cooking.
There you go. So how has that changed since medieval times? I know food sanitation and food safety has gotten a lot better, hopefully, over the last 400 years. But really, how have we come along the trail to refine this?
Well, I mean, first of all, some very dramatic differences. many of the foods we think of as indispensable staples, foods like the chili pepper, the tomato, chocolate, vanilla, turkey, these all originated in the New World. So these were not available to European cooks in the Middle Ages. But what's equally fascinating to me is how much has remained the same from the Middle Ages to the modern day. And first of all, I mean, if you think about it, all fires in the Middle Ages were, all cooking was done over wood fire or charcoal fire.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just actually getting back to that. I actually have a story coming up in the New York Times next month on the resurgence of wood fire cooking. I mean, it's, you know, more things change, more they remain the same. Another thing interesting from a personal point of view, this medieval cooking in Europe research actually dates to my Reed College days. I was writing my thesis on a medieval French poet. And while I was in the stacks, I came across a medieval cookbook. I thought, my God, people were writing cookbooks 700 years ago? Yeah, they were. And the operative word here is writing, because they had to be written out longhand. One of the books was by a chef named Taillevaux. His name means wind slicer, undoubtedly a reference to his knife skills. And that book has remained in print continuously since 1375. And, you know, talk about an aspiration. I only hope my books will stay in print for another 600 years.
Well, I was going to say the distribution was probably a little rough back then, but it's still around. So, you know, that's a good deal. Your stuff will probably be around 600 years, I imagine, Stephen.
Well, from your lips to God's ears. you know, another funny thing is that, and this is true in France, there's a long tradition of French chefs who appropriate other people's manuscripts and put their name on it. Paul Bocuse did it. This guy Taillevaux, turns out that he took a lot of his manuscript from another unknown medieval cookbook author who lived about 30 years earlier. But what was really fascinating to me is that there were over 100 different medieval cookbooks, and they were written in Middle English. They were written in Old French, Middle German. They were written in Latin. So obviously the cooking was very important. The culinary arts were very important. I suppose if you think about it, you know, we didn't have all the distractions back in the Middle Ages we do today. So, I mean, cooking and banquets and feasting was a very social.
I didn't catch that last part either. You said cooking, feasting, and banquets were what?
Yeah, cooking, feasting, and banquets were a very important cultural activity.
Ah, yes, indeed. Well, we still do that at our house.
You know. Well, we still do it now. And I mean, you know, the old sort of quip about 21st century America, you know, never has there been more food media, television, Instagram, and never have fewer people cooked at home than in our history. So I guess we're fascinated by food, but not necessarily cooking it. However, that's a very different state of affairs when you think about live fire cooking and grilling, because there, people are passionate. People still are grilling with great enthusiasm and often.
Well, and one of the things I noticed in Project Fire is you're kind of really going after, and you and I have talked about this before, the caveman style, you know, right on the coal, so to speak, right in the heat. And has that really taken off? Have you noticed? I mean, through your TV shows and through your books and that, have you gotten some converts to that?
Oh, it's happening big time all over the country and literally all over the world. I mean, the caveman steak was actually pioneered by Dwight D. Eisenhower, who used to routinely horrify guests and journalists at the White House by throwing a sirloin steak directly on a bed of embers. But it's a spectacular way of cooking. I'm seeing it all over at restaurants all over the world, and not just cavemanning meat. I'm seeing cavemanning of vegetables, you know, cabbage on the grill, corn on the cob on the grill, eggplant directly in the embers. These foods are something about charring food directly in contact with burning embers that gives it a smoke flavor and a crust that you just can't get with another method of cooking.
That's true. We're going to take a break. We're going to be back with Stephen Reichlin here on Barbecue Nation talking about his new book, Project Fire, right after this.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again. Because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping. And the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence. In restless dreams I walked alone. Narrow streets of cobblestone. Just a poor boy, though my story is seldom told. I have squandered my resistance for a pocket full of mumbles, such are promises. All lies and jest, still the man hears what he wants to hear and disregards.
Hey, welcome back to Barbecue Nation. I'm JT along with Dr. Dave, and hello to everybody out there on the Radio Northwest Network. Also, point out a couple of our affiliates, KWRO in Coos Bay and KLBM in La Grande. And we're talking with Stephen Reichlin today, one of our favorites here on the nation, about his new book, Project Fire. So you've got, I know you got a little rain in your background there, Stephen. Stephen's doing this interview as he's going between interviews, so to speak, or promotional stops. But you've got 7 steps to grilling Nirvana. And if you just want to lightly touch on those, because I know you cover them in the book, and kind of give some people what your thoughts are on that.
Well, this is really a crash course on grilling. And by the way, it's very apropos we're talking about this because I just finished a 2018 session of Barbecue University at Colorado Springs. That's where I'm heading down from. And in terms of the methods, you know, I always like to say that grilling is simple, but it isn't always easy. And what I mean by that is that there are a lot of different kinds of grills, a lot of different fuels, there are a lot of different accessories. Each grill works differently. There are half a dozen, 8 or 9 different grilling methods. And you kind of have to master all those basics, you know, to really kind of get your game on with grilling.
Mm-hmm.
So the very first one is choose your grill. I mean, that's the first step. And, you know, the decisions you need to make. Do you want to go with charcoal? Do you want to go with propane? Do you want to go with a wood-burning grill? You know, all are used and actively used for grilling, but each operates differently and produces a different flavor. The second step is to choose your fuel. You know, again, we kind of alluded to that, but lump charcoal versus charcoal briquettes versus wood, which is my favorite fuel for grilling, versus propane versus natural gas, you know, all
sure.
have deep implications on how you'll proceed at the grill.
Yeah, and up here, of course, we're in the country where the wood pellet stoves came from.
That's right.
And, you know, they've obviously taken off, not just here in the Northwest, but across the country. And, you know, they actually take a little use, a little time and a little experience to get used to them and the way they cook versus just your old run-of-the-mill, you know, propane or gas grill and or your charcoal briquettes. It's a whole different thing. So, yeah, I think people should be, you know, get a little seasoning. How's that for a quip for you? Get a little seasoning on their grill. And
well, that, you know, that's important. And then, you know, you think about the accessories, and there's the big four, which, of course, are a stiff wire grill brush or a wooden scraper, long-handled spring-loaded tongs. You need an instant-read meat thermometer, and you need heavy sway gloves. But then beyond that, you know, there are any number of accessories, specialized accessories, chimney starters for people who want to grill on charcoal, rib racks, shellfish racks. You know, so,
sure.
So that's sort of that's kind of the third piece of the puzzle. And then the fourth piece of the puzzle is seasoning the food, right? Because there are really three opportunity windows of opportunity for seasoning your food. You can do it when the food is raw, in which case you'd use a rub or a marinade or a brine. You can season the food actually while it's grilling, which might be a mop sauce or butter or glaze. So the third kind of window of opportunity for seasoning barbecued foods is after the food has come off the grill, right? After your steak has come off, your ribs, your chops. And at that point, you might add a barbecue sauce. You might serve with a relish or a chutney or a salsa. And where it gets really interesting is when you start to layer those flavors. So you might start with a rub, and then you might apply a glaze during grilling, and then you might serve salsa at the end. And when you compound that with the charring, the smoky flavors you get with the Maillard effect from grilling and the actual wood smoke, you know, you're talking about a single dish that might have five different layers of flavor.
I like that. It's better than you're going to get at Taco Bell. I know that.
Yeah.
What's your favorite? I mean, if I came to your house in Miami and said, hey, Stephen, cook me up what you is your favorite dish to do. I know people ask me that, you know, because I do the TV stuff and more locally, but you get asked those questions a lot. So I'm going to ask you that question. What's your favorite one to do?
Well, that's a very easy one. It would be the harpooned swordfish that we buy off fishing boats. So it's super fresh. We grill it over a wood fire, and we serve it either with capers or olives fried in butter and just fried until crisp and poured over that. So what's that? That's a three-ingredient dish plus salt and pepper, and I eat that once a week and hope to do so to the end of my days.
You sold me when you said capers. I love capers.
Butter-fried capers are pretty amazing.
Yeah. Ooh. David is drooling over here on the council when we're doing this. So I guess I can't talk about that anymore because I don't have any more towels to clean up his mess. Does your wife agree with you on the swordfish, or does she prefer a different dish?
Well, my wife loves the swordfish. My wife actually loves halibut, and we use a different method for halibut, and this is kind of another of what I call the new methods of grilling. So you know what a plancha is, right? A plancha is an iron, cast iron slab. It's kind of like a griddle.
Right.
And because halibut is a fish that's prone to sticking to the grill grate, we prefer to cook it on the plancha, but we do it on the plancha on a charcoal kettle grill so that I can add wood chips or chunks to the fire. And halfway through the plancha process, I close the grill lid so I infuse the fish with wood smoke. And it's, you know, you may be surprised, you know, for a guy who's so associated with meat to hear me naming two seafoods. But those are two absolute Reichland favorites.
Ah, that's good. We're going to take another break really quickly. Stephen is going to be at the Powell's on Southwest Cedar Hills Boulevard at 7 o'clock on the 6th. Don't miss it. We'll be back on Barbecue Nation.
I am just a poor boy, though my story is seldom told. I squandered my resistance for a pocket full of mumbles, such are promises. All lies and jest, still the man hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest.
Welcome back to, what are we doing? Oh, Barbecue Nation. How about that? We've got Stephen Reichland with us today. His new book is Project Fire. Before we get back to talking with Stephen here, again, this portion is brought to you by Painted Hills Natural Beef. From the heart of the Pacific Northwest comes a beef product you can feel good about, and you'll feel good after you eat it. I can verify that personally. And also our buddies down at Barclays. If you're going down 99E this week, check it out because they've got sidewalk sales at Barclays in Woodburn. Now we'll get back to talking with Stephen Reichland about his new book, Project Fire. I want to talk about a couple of the recipes with you, Stephen. Caveman lobster, I mean, in a way, that didn't seem you know, new or unusual to me, of course, growing up around seafood, because we've done that with crabs out here on the West Coast. But,
oh, really? Right in the embers?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, very interesting.
Yeah. But, you know, I like it because there's variations of that. I mean, I've been to New England a number of times, not as many times as you had, but, you know, you've done dug the pit and you have the branches and the hot rocks and all that kind of stuff. But I want to know about how you do your caveman lobster.
Well, it's very simple. So, and we did this on the new Project Fire TV show, which launched on PBS over the weekend. So, we were down in Solvang, California, just north of Santa Barbara.
Sure.
A Santa Barbara fisherman brought us a cache of a fresh catch. I didn't exactly know what was going to be in the back of the truck, but one thing in the back of the truck were these beautiful, fresh Santa Barbara lobsters, what we call back east spiny lobsters.
Mm-hmm.
So I cut them in half, and I had the idea to just lay them shell side down on the embers, caveman style. And then the twist came is once they were almost cooked, I turned them over, and I actually charred the flesh side in the embers. You brush the ash off with a pastry brush before serving. And, again, you get a char and a smoke flavor that you just can't achieve with a conventional grill.
Oh, it sounds delicious. I mean, it really does. I'm kind of
scared. And then we served that, by the way, we served that with an absinthe butter. So we made we fried garlic, we deglazed the pan with absinthe, and then we whisked in butter, and it's a pretty sensational sauce.
Can we stop this interview? I'm going to go get something to eat. I'm really hungry. No, it's good. Anything that you do with seafood on an open grill, as far as I'm concerned, is really good. I mean, that's just me, but I think it's really, really good. You know, we've done steamers and clams. 2 weeks ago, we were at the coast, and we did the oysters on the grill again, and I just love that stuff. So, anyway, I digress.
Well, you know, I always say that fish lives in water, but reaches its apotheosis through fire.
Well, there you go. There you go. Your breakfast burgers. One of the recipes in here that kind of grabbed my attention was your breakfast burger, because it's not exactly like a burger, although it kind of looks like one, but it's not. And you've grilled this, so walk our listeners through that, because I think it's. I'm going to start making some of these, is what I'm going to tell you. But go ahead, Stephen.
Well, you know, breakfast, that was one of the most fun chapters to write in the book. And, again, that's a meal that most people don't think of using their grill to prepare. But I'm an early riser, and I often fire up my grill in the morning. So one of my favorites is grilled eggs, where you actually crack eggs in a skillet and then top the eggs. Well, I direct grill slices of prosciutto, which get all crispy, and I crumble that on top, and that becomes prosciutto bacon.
Mm-hmm.
And then heavy cream, grated cheese, breadcrumbs, a little butter, olive oil, and that's indirect grilled with that fistful of wood chips to generate wood smoke. Serve with grilled bread to dunk in the yolks. That's pretty amazing. The dish to which you refer, it is breakfast sausage instead of ground beef. It's molded in a cup shape. Indirect grilled, you crack an egg in the center, grated cheese and scallion on top. Again, indirect grilled, again, wood smoke. It's a wonderful meal, and it's a wonderful way to start your day by firing up your grill.
I have your picture here. Of course, I've got the book with me, and I have the picture here, and David just tried to eat the picture. So.
It's in color.
It's in color, yes. Of course it is.
Oh, I'm starving.
Well, let me do a shout-out to my photo crew. The photo shoots are very intense. They're very wonderful. A lot of people work in long hours, and I am lucky to have both my field chef and my food stylist also work on the TV shows. So, you know, we get together a couple times a year, and it's like a family reunion, and everybody, you know, all you have to do is think it, and it gets done.
Oh, I love that part. So, Stephen, what's the toughest recipe you had to come up with, or the most challenging, I should say, in this book?
That's an interesting question. The most challenging recipe. Well, you know, most of my previous books have focused both on true barbecue, which is indirect, low heat, and very smoky, and grilling, which is generally direct or indirect, but at a higher heat and with not necessarily with smoke. So I would say, like, some of the rib dishes, you know, which I might be inclined to barbecue, but to do them at a higher temperature on a grill. And it gives you a completely different consistency that I personally really like. You really get some chew to the meat, and it's much more a textural experience.
Well, and I mean, when you're developing these, do you just kind of, I think like a lot of very good culinary people, you sit there and you say, kind of that old George Carlin, you know, axiom, if you nail two things together that have never been nailed together before, somebody will buy it. But I think when you're developing a recipe, it's kind of like, well, why can't I put this A with this B and see how it works? Is that your thought process?
You know, there are so many ways. I mean, that is some of it. I always sleep with a pad next to my bed, and believe it or not, sometimes I dream this stuff and write it down when I wake up. A lot of it comes from my travels. You know, as I said, whenever I start a new book, I pack a suitcase. I'm on the road 3.5 to 4 months a year, always getting new ideas. I get ideas at Barbecue University. And sometimes the equipment generates the idea. A new grill that came out about 2 years ago, it's called a pedestal grill or a plancha grill. And if you imagine a ring-shaped plancha with a... with a fire pit in the middle in which you can burn logs. So the model we use was something called the Arc Flame. And that gave me the idea for the bacon-seared albacore tuna loin. Mm-hmm. The same fisherman from Santa Barbara bought us some beautiful albacore tuna loins. So I wrapped them in bacon because albacore is a very lean fish. And you want to put some fat back into it. And I kind of direct grilled it to put some smoke on it, and then I pulled it off on the plancha part to crisp and sear that bacon. And, you know, that was just a fantastic combination. And you can do it on a plancha. You can do it on a grill, but you won't get quite the same consistency. But it's an example of a new grill that actually is, you know, actually dictated a new dish.
Yeah, kind of off the subject of the book for a minute, but do you have – a lot of people contact you that have, you know, they develop grills, they're marketing them, they're selling them, and they say, we want you to try this, please?
Sure, of course.
Yeah. And then how many of them do you end up actually utilizing?
Not all of them. you know, if the technology is good, or the idea, it's funny, I was telling you about this wood grilling piece that I just wrote for the Times,
mm-hmm.
and most of the wood-burning grills are very expensive. You know, they have to be heavy metal, but there's a new grill called a kudu, which is basically it's a metal, like sort of big metal bowl that has an upright pole with grill grates at different heights that swing over the fire. And you can use that you can get one of those for about $500, and you can be grilling over a wood fire like the pros.
I love it. Hey, we're going to take another break, but before we do, I have to tell you about our new email address. It's bbqnation, that's the letters bbqnation@alphamediausa.com, or you can also do recipes at alphamediausa.com. I know that's a long URL there, but that's what we got to work with, okay? You can check us out on Facebook, too. It's Barbecue Nation with JT on Facebook. And, David, tweet for us.
Barbecue Nation.
At Tweety. There you go. We're going to take a break. We're going to be back with Stephen Reichlin right after this. Don't go away. Thanks for listening. You are on the Barbecue Nation, and that's on your dial. And I am JT along with Dr. Dave, and we've got Stephen Reichlin with us today. Before we get back to Stephen real quick, I want to tell you about our KCBS news for the week. That's right, the Kansas City Barbecue Society. They, the American Royal announced their 2018 Hall of Fame inductees, Tuffy Stone. we've had Tuffy on the show a couple times. Tootsie Tamanez. I can't ever say Tootsie's name right. Tamanez, yes. And Charlie Virgos. Those are the three inductees into the Hall of Fame, and congratulations. Well, Charlie's gone, but Tootsie and Tuffy are still around. So we'll be covering that more as it comes up this fall from the Royal. Do you know Tootsie,
Steven? I do know Tootsie. I was actually just with Tootsie about 10 days ago in Austin. In Lexington, Texas. I drove out from Austin at 6 o'clock one morning to get there in time for when snow's open. It's one day a week on Saturday mornings.
There you go. What's your biggest gratification? Back to the book now. What's your biggest gratification about writing Project Fire?
I think typing the words "the end." No, it's I joke, but it's it's always gratifying. You have a vision, you have an idea, watching it come together in specifics. Watching the photography come together, and let's face it, photography and video really bring a book alive.
Oh, sure.
I'm on book tour now. I've been on book tour for about 5 weeks, and traveling through airports and people kind of say thumbs up, love the new book. That that's immensely gratifying.
Oh, anytime you get that kind of ratification of your work, I guess would be a good word for that. It's extremely pleasing, I think. At least it is for me, and it obviously is for you. Do you have another book in the offing?
I do have another book in the offing. I'm actually working on a book on brisket.
Well, there you go. I mean, on all the times you and I have talked, I mean, I think we've only talked about brisket maybe 2/3 of those times. Yeah,
I was going to say about 100 times. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
The interesting thing about this one, it's going to be brisket outdoors, of course, barbecued, and then brisket indoors. So I'll be looking at braised briskets, at Vietnamese pho, brisket noodle soup, Korean noodle soup. It will be about the history of brisket, the chemistry of brisket, the physics of brisket, the culture of brisket. And there'll be a few surprises, like I actually have a brisket dish you can direct grill, which is pretty unexpected for such a tough, ornery cut of beef.
Yeah. I'll tell you, one of the best briskets I ever ate, just FYI, when I grew up on a ranch, and our power would go out in the big storms every year, and sometimes it'd just be out overnight, sometimes just a couple hours. One time it was out for 12 days, and we had three fireplaces in the ranch house there, and one of them had an arm for you could hang a Dutch oven on and cook in it. And my mom had, a piece of brisket. I think she had to cut it in half to get it in the Dutch oven, but she put it in there in the morning and cooked it over the fire all day long. Of course, we had to keep the house warm too. And when we came in at night, it may have been, Stephen, just because we were so damned hungry, but I still think that was one of the best pieces of brisket I ever had in my life. So, all right. Well, I think it's about time for us to get out of here. But before we do, I want to ask Stephen where people can find out more information about Project Smoke and his TV shows and Barbecue University.
The website is barbecuebible.com. That's BarbecueBible.com. Sign up for our Up and Smoke newsletter. And the new Project Fire TV show, which in a way brings the book alive even more than the photos, is airing on PBS. I'll tell you, you must feel this too. We are in the greatest field on the planet. I mean, we get to travel, we get to meet fascinating people, eat amazing food. It's just quite remarkable.
Oh, I love it. I used to think my job traveling with horses was the greatest job in the world. I think cooking and doing what we do is the greatest job in the world. Stephen Reichland, thank you very much for being with us. And don't forget, folks, on the 6th, 7 o'clock over at Powell's on Cedar Hills Boulevard, he'll be over there. And you can probably get him to sign your book. For Dr. Dave and myself, we got to get out of here for the week. We enjoyed having Stephen with us, and all of you listeners, thanks for tuning in. Remember our motto around here, turn it, don't burn it. You can check out my stuff more on thecowboycook.com, and we will see you all next week.